Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, May 25th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by mParticle. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. One thing to know about me, my last e-commerce purchase was 50 fake roses. I handed them out at a birthday party, and now I feel like I'm prepared to compete on The Bachelor. On this episode, we'll be discussing private label brands, what's new with them, and how they can inspire cult followings. My guest today, another former retail podcast host, head of retail and e-commerce practice, and principal analyst, Susie David Canyon. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Sarah. I love that you bought 50 fake roses online.
Thank you. I feel like every party should have favors. I want to bring back the goodie bag.
I love it.
All right, let's jump in. It's time for news and reviews, where I give you the news and our guest tells me their reviews. Susie, today the news is this headline, which comes at us from CNBC. Target shares sink more than 25% after company says high costs and inventory woes hit profits. Susie, what are your reviews on that headline?
So, I mean, I think headlines are meant to grab attention, right? So this definitely grabbed everybody's attention. It is factual. Obviously, Target did not perform well. I think what it doesn't talk about is that Target comp sales were excellent in terms of comped to last year. They were up, I think it was like low single digits, but still off of huge comps for Q1 2021. Target did not get any credit for it. As a former retail practitioner, I would say doing comp sales on such high numbers and having positive growth is amazing. And then when you think about Amazon's recent Q1 sales performance, you know, that leaves even more rosy picture for Target. However, because of all of the inflationary pressures and the supply chain woes and the cost of bringing the goods were so high, Target's profit, so the amount of money they made, did not obviously meet the necessary targets, and shareholder folks were upset. And so this is where the headline comes from. I think we're going to see a lot more of these headlines. There are going to be a few retailers that are going to do okay because they have a lot of basics. And then they were able to just figure out the supply chain a little bit more smoothly than maybe Target and Walmart did. And Target is in good company in terms of tanking stocks. But I'm a little bit sad about the headline.
Yeah, I feel like I saw similar headlines around the same time, being around like May 18th about Walmart as well, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
I did my part, though. I went to Target in Q1, so.
As did I. I am a Target Red Card holder. I feel like I am one of their more loyal customers. They're not wrong, though, the way that the CEO was talking about it. I mean, people, and we'll talk about this more later, but people are feeling the pressure, right? And so people are trading down. It's a very specific household income that shops at a Target and a Walmart. Mm-hmm. And so they are feeling the pressure and they have to make choices. And so they're not buying all the fun things that they once were buying when their pockets were full of cash during the pandemic. And people are also choosing different things to purchase when they do have money, right? So they're doing experiences more. And Target was talking about toys, which I thought was fun, that toys are doing well for them. And that's kind of a nice thing to think about. But everything is more expensive, including driving, gas prices, mm-hmm. obviously. And so I think it's going to have an impact and it's going to be difficult before it gets better.
Yeah, I wonder if I'm still going to be buying 50 roses to give out at a party in Q2.
Well, I guess it depends on how much more the roses cost next time, right?
All right, let's keep going. It is time for Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail concept. Today, we're talking about what I know is one of Susie's favorite topics, private label brands. I grew up buying whatever the cheapest product on the shelf was, regardless of the name brand, and it seems like a lot of other consumers have caught up to me, but we'll get to that later on. So, Susie, private label brands are a huge business. In your Spotlight on Private Label Brands report that recently came out, you note that Target alone has 10 owned brands that have raked in more than $1 billion each since launch. Can you share how you define a private label brand?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really great question to get us started because there are so many different types of brands out there. So private label is a brand that is owned, operated from top to bottom by the retailer who sells other people's brands. So when you think about a vertically integrated brand like a Gap, they are technically a private label, but they only sell themselves. And so they don't really qualify in what we consider to be private label. A private label is like the Good & Gather or the Kirkland brand or some of these other brands that we think of very strongly that people, consumers gravitate towards and go to a specific store to purchase. And they are only available at that one store. Which is a little bit sort of in parallel to that are what we call exclusive brands, which are brands that are made by another bigger brand that people know. Like, for example, Target carried Champion's Champs brand. So it's owned and operated by a different brand, but made exclusively for one retailer. So again, specific to a retailer, but not made by that retailer. And then the other one that everybody else knows, which is like a Nike, which is a market brand, or a national brand, which is both a wholesale business, so sold to multiple different types of retailers, and sometimes an owned business where they have their own stores and operate their own model.
Gotcha. So the market brand, that's my Dove body wash on the shelf. The exclusive brand is some sort of body wash only Target holds, but they don't make. And the private label brand, that's the one that looks like the Dove body wash, but it's the Target brand one.
Yes. Although I don't know if there are exclusive private label brands that are body washes. It's like the Rihanna Fenty for Target would be the exclusive in that example.
I would buy Fenty for Target.
Right? I mean, who wouldn't? I think I just gave them their next billion-dollar idea.
Honestly, if Target is listening, you're coming in as a huge fan and you're giving them great ideas. And if Rihanna is listening, you're giving her great ideas as well. So in that same report, you noted that 90% of consumers who have switched to a private label brand have been driven by value. So clearly price is a key advantage for consumers. But what's the advantage for companies?
So Sarah, when you started, you were talking about how you went and bought the cheapest thing on the shelf, and that's just how you went shopping. And I think that was like, I mean, I don't know, in the 80s and 90s, maybe even, that's what people did, right? If you were looking to save a buck, you bought the private label brand, whereas now private label brands is so much more than that. It's really a way for consumers to find and dabble in certain categories that they might not otherwise, or, you know, for retailers, the specific question you asked me was, why is this important to retailers? We know for consumers, it's a way to save money. For retailers, there are so many reasons why it's important. The biggest one is because it's a way to drive loyalty and traffic. Since you can't buy that brand at another retailer, it's not like a Levi's, right? Where you can do some showrooming, check to see who's selling it at a cheaper price, and then go and buy it from that retailer. If you love Good & Gather or the Target equivalent private label for body wash, then you're going to go to Target. You're not going to go to Walmart or Costco, right? So I think that is by far the most important reason why a retailer would want to have private label assortment. The other ones which are akin to that is strong margin. You have control over the production. So not only can you figure out what the cost of the item is so that you can have a better, stronger margin, but you also have more control over the quality and the output and when you're going to get the inventory. It's also a great, I mean, I could keep going, so you tell me when the list is too long, but, you know, it's another really, really good way to fill in an assortment. So sometimes retailers want to have brands that don't necessarily want to sell to them for whatever reason. And so this is a way, like if you think about even a way to create a brand that you think is important to your consumer that you can't find in the marketplace. So think about Nordstrom launched a private label brand that is gender fluid. So it's timely. They think that it's an important piece of the assortment that is currently missing. They must have done some research to see who else out there was already offering something like this. They didn't find the right brand that they wanted to bring into their assortment. And so they created their own. Actually, that one I think is with an influencer. But, you know, that's another way of going about building a private label is working with an influencer. Just gives you a better marketing reach.
It's interesting because I'm more than willing to buy the private label or store brand of that Dove body wash, but I don't actually know what it's called at Target. So, I mean, clearly it's working on the value level, but on the marketing level, I still don't know what its name is.
So I think that's another really interesting thing, right? Macy's has some pretty big private label brands that people, so it's the opposite of what you're saying, that people didn't even realize that they're Macy's private label, whereas what you're saying is the opposite. Like, I gravitate towards the private label and I don't actually really care what it's called, but I know it's going to be good quality because it's from Target. I mean, I kind of put words in your mouth there. We'd like to think it's going to be good quality because it's from
the
Target.
The body wash is.
Do you actually buy that body wash?
I get either the Dove or that body wash, depending on the price. Either one.
Yeah. You're price sensitive. I mean, it's normal. There are a lot of people who are price sensitive. And that's another reason why private label is so important. And if we think about our current economic conditions with inflation and the price of goods increasing, this is where private label will become even more important, because as the retailer has more power over the price structure, they're going to be able to keep relatively okay margins and keep the price down for consumers.
I want to talk about that specifically. So you mentioned inflation. That obviously is a huge topic right now. What else is different about this moment that's driving people toward private label? Or is it just inflation is the huge elephant in the room doing it?
So I think inflation is part of it. It's a newer part of the last 2 years in terms of, as inflation increases, the consumer price index is increasing. And so people's wages might not be increasing as quickly. And so then they only have the $100, but everything is more expensive. So they're having to make choices. And so if you need to eat and wash yourself, use a body wash, then you're going to start making different choices, right? So inflation is one. At the onset of the pandemic, it was much more about supply chain. The national brands were having a tough time staying on shelves and retailers were having a tough time getting inventory. So when you start to think about private label, because the retailer has more power over the inventory and when it comes and where it goes and what channel it's going to be and what store it's going to be, that made it easier. And since consumers needed Lysol wipes, if they couldn't find Lysol wipes, they were ready to buy the Target brand because they needed it, right? So there are some categories that it is much, like, it's so much easier to switch even before the pandemic, because either it's a better price and you know the quality is going to be fine. And then there are other categories that are much more brand driven. But when the item is not there, then you're just going to buy whatever is there because you need the item. So I think that helped consumers just get more comfortable with switching. And we know there have been a lot of studies about this. And in fact, in the private label one, we did our own study. And, you know, I think it was like 41% of consumers in the last 6 months of when we did the study, so earlier this year, switched to a private label brand. And it's not because there was nothing there. It's just because they're more open to it.
So it sounds like private label is the new black. We talked earlier about Target's rough quarter, though, and a lot of earnings reports have spelled similar stories for big brands. What do private label brands need to do to succeed moving forward?
So that's a great question. I think one of the most important things is to look at their own assortment. The retailer needs to look at their assortment and see what's missing, right? You don't want to have duplicate types of products on the shelf, because then you're just sort of cannibalizing your own sales. So you need to have a clear lane for the private label and help really articulate what the values are. So not just dollar values, but the, like, social values. Is it sustainable? You know, does it meet certain, like, ethical labor requirements? Or is it made in a factory where they use less water? So all these types of attributes that are not maybe what you normally would have are really important to be successful. And then I think it's also using all of the different marketing tools. Traditionally, private label brands were not as expensive also because retailers didn't really make such a push on the marketing side and on the packaging side, because it really was just about being the cheapest product there. And now I think it's more important than ever. It's such a cluttered brand space that you have to stand out, and dollar value is not enough. It's about quality and dollar value, but also about marketing and packaging and drawing the consumer's attention.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for talking with me about what private label brands need to do to succeed. We'll be right back to talk about the buzziest and, dare I say, cultiest private label brands. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, M Particle.
At the end of the day, your customer has to be at the center of everything you do. This starts with the right customer data strategy as well as the right foundation to solve the challenges that typically inhibit success, such as data quality, data governance, and connectivity. mParticle is your real-time customer data infrastructure that helps you accelerate your data strategy by cleansing, visualizing, and integrating your customer data from anywhere to anywhere. Ultimately, better data leads to better decisions, better customer experiences, and better outcomes. See why the best brands choose mParticle? Go to www.mParticle.com.
Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. So we talked about what private label brands are, we talked about where they came from and where they will go. Sounds like I'm singing the Cotton Eye Joe. Now let's focus on the brands themselves. Susie, can you rank for me the top five private label brands with the cultiest following and shed some light on why these brands stand out?
Absolutely. So this was a really hard exercise for me because I had to remember that I work in research and not to be so personal about my list and to think about not a sample size of one, but a sample size of many. So again, these are in my opinion, but based on research, what I think are the top five. I'm going to start with the number five brand, which I think has been in existence for a long time, and it's Walmart's Great Value brand. I think for that customer that goes to Walmart, they really, really go to buy that. I think it does exactly what it says, which is bigger pack sizes with good quality for the price. The Great Value brand offers a really, really good product assortment, especially in paper goods, where you can get good value. And the way I think about value, and I think the way most retailers think about value, Sarah, is around price quality. So for the right quality for the right price. So I think Walmart gets number five. For number four, I'm going with one of my favorites, which is Macy's Inc. And the reason I picked that one is because most people don't even realize that's a Macy's private label brand. And it's also actually carried at Bloomingdale's because it's owned by the same company. And those people really gravitate towards that brand. It has a very specific style. And people, I've seen people in the store come to a Macy's to go to that section on the floor and look for the items. And they are, again, good value for what you're getting. And some seasons are a little bit too bedazzled, if you ask me. But for the most part, it's really great clothes. And they've been able to move from women's clothes to other, to men's clothes, to home textiles. And so I think it's a great, great private label brand that's all encompassing.
Sounds like it has like really a designer feel that, like you said, you wouldn't even realize is private label.
Yes. A designer feel at a very good price. And at Macy's, it's almost always on sale.
Susie, can you tell me your number three private label brand with the cultiest following?
So I'm going to go with Target, but specifically Good & Gather. It's brand new for them, so it might not have the biggest cult following, but I know I tell everybody about their dried mangoes. They have amazing quality, the Good & Gather. It is
okay,
not
I have an important question about that. Are they the dried mangoes with sugar added or without sugar added?
Obviously not.
Perfect.
No sulfur,
we're on the same
no
page.
Sugar. They are. Have you tried the Kirkland ones? Those are pretty good too, but that
those ones are so good.
Yeah, these ones are better, just so you know. Yeah, I'm telling
it's
you.
It's not that I'm averse to sugar. I don't care at all about added sugar, but a mango is sweet. I don't need it.
I know. These are amazing. So they are now, and I think that's part of the Good & Gather brand ethos. It's like natural, sustainable. The packaging is so simple and so crisp. And again, I think it's one of those you wouldn't realize was a private label, but it is a private label at Target. And it fills a void that they didn't have because a lot of the CPG brands don't necessarily have a good pricing for more organic-y sort of natural products. And Good & Gather, they have some amazing, amazing things.
Yeah. I think that Good & Gather really emphasizes the feel of Target's like move into groceries from a few years ago.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And they have quite a few private label brands that are in the grocery space. And I think that's one of the categories where it's so much easier to move into private label because, you know, I don't know, a lentil is a lentil, right? So does it really matter whose lentil?
Lentil is a lentil. That's so true.
Yeah.
I'm always saying a lentil is a lentil.
Can you tell what else I buy from Good & Gather? They have this great lentil, like pre-cooked lentils. They're delicious.
It sounds like that lentil is better than just a normal lentil. Susie, can you tee up for me your number two private label brand with the cultiest following?
So this, I actually think, is truly a cult following, Kirkland. People go to the store, to Costco. It's the Costco private label brand, to buy Kirkland. And Kirkland sells everything under the sun, from batteries to cashews to dried mangoes to Sarah. What are we allowed to talk about? What you used to buy from them?
Yeah, I'll mention it. We were talking about this before. So I went to college in the Midwest, where they sell beer everywhere, including at Costco. And I have said before, I'll say it again, the Kirkland beer is good. It's cheap. It's nothing crazy fancy, although I do believe they have other fancy options there, but it's good.
And that's the whole point, right? It's like you are happy with what you're paying for it, right? It like goes down smoothly because you feel like you got a good deal. Not only are they cult-like brand for us as consumers, but for Costco, they make up a very big part of their business, and it is a really important brand for them, right? And that's what drives a lot of people to Costco, is to buy the Kirkland brand.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I feel like living in the city, if I hear someone has a Costco membership and a car, I'm like, when can we meet?
Totally.
When are you free?
Totally.
All right, Susie, what to you is the number one private label brand with the cultiest following?
So this I'm saying because I know it's the right answer, but I'm not sure that I am part of the cult. But I think we can all agree that if you love Trader Joe's, you are willing to stand in line to buy their bagel mix.
Their bagel mix is good.
I know. My brother's kids go after that every time. It's like a must have, and it is sprinkled on every single dish that you can imagine.
Because it's good.
Yes. So I'm not that cult follower of Trader Joe's, but I do realize that it has every category under the sun in the grocery space that people, again, will wait in line.
Yeah, Trader Joe's is good. I don't know if I'm one of their cult followers, but I definitely like Trader Joe's. I think it's really interesting compared to these other brands because, like, it's really the main brand in the Trader Joe's space, right? I guess Kirkland, same with the Costco space. If I walk into a Trader Joe's, I'm getting Trader Joe's brand.
So that's a great point. So technically, no, because Trader Joe's sells other non-Trader Joe branded products, although their mix at Trader Joe's, the grocery store, is probably much more heavily dependent on the Trader Joe branded products. Whereas at Kirkland, I think their last reports had said something like, I can't remember if it was 30% of their mix. Like if you think about when you go into a Costco, you see Levi's sometimes, you know, you never know what you're going to get. There are all kinds of books, there are flowers, there are pharmaceuticals, they have an optician, they have jewelry, you know, like I've seen Tag Heuers at Costco. So they carry tons and tons of different brands, of which one is Kirkland. I don't know if it's their largest volume brand, but it certainly makes up a large portion of their sales. And it's only available at Costco, and that's what makes it private label.
Gotcha. Well, Susie, thank you for joining me today. I am going to head to Trader Joe's and see if I can find some lentils that I can convince you are better than the Target ones, although I'm sure that they're both good contenders. Thank you for joining me today, Susie.
Thanks so much for having me. I think this is one of my favorite topics. I'm so glad that we got to talk about it.
Awesome. And thank you, Victoria, who edits the pod and who I know is a huge Trader Joe's fan. I'll see you next week for another episode of Reimagining Retail, where I'll be talking with Susie once again and with Andrew about how brands revitalize themselves. You can also tune in tomorrow for Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by mParticle. Thanks.